morning. Our case this morning is United States against Phillips. Counsel for the defense.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Lieutenant Anthony Lehman, and I represent the appellant, Major Daryl Phillips, United States Marine Corps. With the court's permission, I'd like to respectfully request 5 minutes of time for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you, Your Honor. This case is an example of when power goes unchecked. Upon examination of the record, this court will find a series of unusual actions that constitutes a far departure from the routine procedures an incarcerated appellant is normally afforded. Appellant was specifically transferred to another prison in order for a specific convening authority to have jurisdiction, a convening authority that incidentally had absolutely no connection to the original court-martial or the charges. But once a convening authority has executed the sentence pursuant to RCM 1113 and Article 16, Usum J, appellant argues that no valid authority exists for another convening authority to increase the severity of that sentence. Appellant challenges the legitimacy of the second convening authority's action dated July 22, 2005. Among the many reasons listed in the appellant's brief, I wish to focus upon three here today. First is that upholding the second court-martial convening authority's action and order would undermine the command prerogative of the first convening authority. The second is that the MCM does not specifically authorize such a substitute convening authority's action to take place. And the third is that there is no precedent for this type of action, that the government cannot cite another case where a substitute convening authority has acted where a first convening authority has already acted. And it seems to be an issue of first impression before this court. Moving to appellant's first argument, that upholding the second court-martial convening authority's action and order would undermine the command prerogative of the first court-martial convening authority. The first court-martial convening authority's action and order is dated June 10, 2004. Before he issued such an action order, he was properly advised by a staff judge advocate. He considered clemency matters submitted by the appellant. He also reviewed the record of trial and the results of trial. He then, pursuant to his action, undertook approved the findings and sentences modified. He specifically modified the sentence. He disapproved $100,000 of the fine. He then suspended an additional $100,000 of the fine. And appellant argues that he specifically did not choose to conduct a fine enforcement hearing. This type of
fine, was a fine due on that date?
Yes, Your Honor, it was.
Before the sentence was executed?
No, Your Honor, it was due when the sentence is executed.
So when was he supposed to conduct the fine enforcement hearing?
He was supposed to conduct it presumably after, Your Honor.
How could he conduct the fine enforcement hearing after, if, as you say, there was no fine approved in the sentence that he approved?
Your Honor, there was a remaining $200,000 of the fine that was still approved in order to execute it. Now, what we see is...
Right, but there was no contingency, according to your argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
So how could he have a fine enforcement hearing with a contingency if it wasn't approved?
Your Honor, what the appellant's arguing is the fact that he didn't have to disapprove that. We see in the normal procedures of how a fine enforcement hearing has...
I'm just focusing on your question, your first point, as to the fine enforcement hearing.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm trying to relate that to your argument that the sentence, as approved, didn't include a fine enforcement contingency confinement.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if the sentence, as approved on that date, didn't include that fine enforcement contingency, then he couldn't have held a hearing afterwards. And since the fine wasn't due until the sentence was approved, he couldn't hold it beforehand. So it seems to me, according to the defense argument, that there's no such thing as a contingent confinement.
Your Honor, as we see, I understand the court's question. The short answer is the fact that the actions of the convening authority demonstrated that he meant to disapprove the fine enforcement hearing. As we see in the case law of how a normal fine enforcement hearing proceeds, traditionally, a court-martial convening authority tells and informs an appellant when this fine is going to be due. We see this procedure outlined in Palmer and Togo and so forth cases. The court-martial convening authority in this
case...
Do
any of those cases state that those specific words have to be used? Any specific words about a fine enforcement contingency hearing? Is there any case that says that any specific words have to be used by the convening authority?
Not to opponent's knowledge.
Okay.
But as we see, there's no case that has come before this court which has illustrated a convening authority has executed a sentence and then re-executed a sentence. In fact, from appellate defense counsel's review of these cases, we see that the original court martial convening authority merely gives notice that a convening authority's action and order will be executed, say, June 1, and appellant must give up.
Well, is it your view that every fine enforcement contingency hearing is a re-execution of a sentence?
No, Your Honor. When appellate defense counsel mentions the fact that there does not seem to be an executed sentence in the previous cases, here we have an executed sentence. And that's where appellant is.
You mean in the previous cases, the convening authority did not approve a fine with a contingent confinement hearing as a component of it?
It does, Your Honor. But in the previous cases, we have the previous court martial convening authority approving the sentence as adjudged, and then the case law states that then a fine enforcement hearing is then conducted, and then a court martial convening authority then executes the sentence.
What language are you relying on in any of those cases for the facts that you just related to the Chief Judge?
If you look at Togo and look at Palmer, we see the words, the convening authority executed the sentence, only appears once. It does not appear twice.
But until the convening authority has executed the sentence, the fine is not due.
That seems to be an interesting quirk of the case law, Your Honor. That is, it says the sentence must be executed.
And so, as a matter of logic, in all of those cases, for them to have a fine enforcement proceeding, didn't the sentence have to be executed and the accused have failed to pay the fine for there to be a need for a fine enforcement hearing?
And admittedly, this is what the government, yes, Your Honor, and admittedly, this is one of the quirks of the case law, the fact that you seem to need a executed sentence in order to then hold a fine enforcement hearing. However, again, as appellant argues, this seems to go against other provisions of the MCM. And as your question correctly points out, I believe in footnote 7 of Palmer, this court did delineate the fact that there is a lack of regulation on the subject. The MCM is silent on this.
Well, should we then construe it to produce a result whereby the sentence falls into a black hole and no one has the power to conduct the hearing?
No, Your Honor. I think this court could quite easily construe the fact that a court martial convening authority can simply give notice of when he is going to execute that sentence, and then when the fine fails to be paid, then it...
Well, but that's of necessity a post-approval thing. The convening authority can't know ahead of time whether the accused is going to pay the fine or not.
Yes, Your Honor. However...
Go ahead.
However, as we can see, once the timeline passes, and we see that a court martial convening authority has given a due date and it has passed, then he must conduct the necessary inquiry as per Soriano as to whether it was indigent or not.
Well, is it your contention that only the original convening authority can do that?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. And in fact,
and what's the authority for that?
Well, Your Honor, the authority for that is the fact that RCM, as previously said, RCM 1113D3 doesn't authorize a substitute convening authority, that there's no precedent for this action for a substitute convening authority to actually have taken place. And the fact that the convening authority was specifically requested, this type of clemency. He specifically requested this type of clemency in his request of April 11, 2003.
Well, he got substantial clemency, didn't he? He wiped out 100K of the fine. He suspended another 100K of it.
Yes, Your Honor. And in addition, the original court martial convening authority, after being specifically advised by the staff judge advocate that he could hold such a hearing, failed to do so. Coincidentally, this is concurrent with the appellant's clemency request that the convening authority not hold a fine enforcement hearing.
When is he supposed to do this?
Because, Your Honor, excuse me, Your Honor, did you say why?
I said when. When is he supposed to do this? He approves the sentence.
Yes, Your Honor.
By definition, he thereafter loses authority over the over the matter.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, when is he supposed to do this? After he's lost authority?
When is he supposed to?
Hold the hearing.
Hold the hearing. He can hold the hearing after he approves the sentence and gives the appellant a due date. However, the appellant, the Court Martial Convening Authority, specifically relied on civilian collection methods in order to collect the fine. The federal government will still get its money due, as stated by the sources in the appellant's brief. The federal government's not without redress. It will collect its $200,000. However, the convening authority simply chose not to transmute the missing fine into confinement.
At that time?
At that time, then.
Well, how does the convening authority retain control of the case? The convening authority says, I order the fine executed. And if there's a time period on it, time will pass, and the fine is not paid. What gives the original convening authority any jurisdiction over the case at that point?
Your Honor, I believe that the original court martial convening authority under the appellant's plan still has jurisdiction. If the original court martial convening authority, as pursuant to the previous cases appellant cited, simply gives notice that your fine is due on this date, and the appellant simply fails to pay the fine, the original court martial convening authority still has jurisdiction in order to conduct the
fine. Where in the manual does the original convening authority have any jurisdiction after the original convening authority has approved the sentence and ordered it executed? Won't the next defense counsel 2 months down the road be in here saying, wait a minute, how did this convening authority order a fine enforcement proceeding? I don't see anything in the manual that allows this convening authority to have any jurisdiction over this case.
Yes, Your Honor, but again, appellate defense counsel merely argues that the original court martial convening authority can approve the sentence. It doesn't have to execute it just yet. He can just simply approve the findings and sentence.
So he or she somehow retains control over the case at that point?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe actions and orders can be separated pursuant to the NCM. I believe we don't normally we don't require an action to be written. It can be incorporated into an order. However, in instances in just this case, where a convening authority can approve the findings and sentence as adjudged and has not yet ordered the sentence executed, it is that limited time window where the original court martial convening authority can hold a fine enforcement hearing.
And the case, does the case go forward to the Court of Criminal Appeals at that point, or does it remain with the convening authority?
At which stage in the proceeding?
Well, under your theory that the convening authority is going to order the fine to be executed, approve the fine, but doesn't order it to be executed, and somehow retains control over the case, waiting to see whether the individual is going to pay or not. Suppose the convening authority gives the individual 6 months, a year, et cetera. Does the case just sit at the convening authority without any appellate review, waiting to see whether the appellant's going to pay or not?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the original court martial convening authority can give a due date, and I believe this court would then, or the lower court would then see if the original court martial convening authority acted with due diligence in making sure that this fine enforcement hearing was collected. However, since the original court martial convening authority is the sole authority presenting the MCM to establish when that fine is supposed to be payable, The timeliness factor seems to be solely within the control of the original court martial convening.
So both the convening authority and the accused agree that a year would be a reasonable time, which isn't all that unusual in a fine proceeding for money to be paid. So the case just sits at the convening authority level for a year waiting for the individual to pay or not?
If the convening authority chose that, and if the appellant specifically requested that, then perhaps it would, Your Honor. That would have to be a case-by-case basis. However, as we see, there is no authority for what the appellant calls a substitute convening authority to undertake an action when the original court martial convening authority has declined to do so. The government, throughout this entire proceeding, has justified its actions on RCM 1113-E3. However,
why is it this like a suspension? When you have a suspension, it's not the original convening authority. The original convening authority is out of the case at that point. It's the convening authority, it's the person who exercises general court martial convening authority over the individual. That just happens to be the name of an officer. It has nothing to do with actually convening the court martial in the case. Isn't that what we have here? That it is a person who happens to be exercising convening authority over this individual, not the convening authority. So in that sense, why is this person any more substitute convening authority, to use your terminology, than the person who exercises suspension vacation powers under RCM 1109.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, we see in the MCM that suspension and fine enforcement hearings seem to be two different mechanisms. And in fact, we see it in the actual convening authority's action and order, where he actually suspends $100,000 of the fine and leaves the remaining $200,000 of the fine to still liable to the appellant. So we see that there are two different mechanisms within the MCM. Now, unfortunately, as I've previously stated, and as this court's noted, that there is a lack of procedure, there is a lack of guidance on exactly how a fine enforcement hearing is supposed to be conducted.
But where's the language in this case, or in any case, which says that the contingent confinement hearing will be conducted by the convening authority, who was the convening authority in the accused case, as opposed to a person who happens to be exercising general court-martial convening authority over the individual?
That is the, yes, Your Honor. The language that both the government and the appellant contest is RCM 1113D3, which says simply, quote, the authority, end quote. Now, looking to the parent regulation of RCM 1113, we see that every time the authority is used in that section, we see that it refers to the original general court martial convening authority. In fact, to the contrary of the government's argument, we see that any time a different court martial convening authority is delineated, it is specifically mentioned by name. I invite this court's attention to subsection C1B, which specifically does say a general court martial convening authority that exercises jurisdiction of the appellant. This court has never defined what, quote, the authority means. However, again, the appellant argues that only when you take the authority out of context can you imply any court martial convening authority pursuant to Article 22. When you place it back into context, you see that it's the original court martial convening authority that is acting pursuant to RCM 1107.
What is the original court martial, on your theory? What is the original GCM convening authority supposed to do? What do you comprehend? He orders the sentence. He approves the sentence on day one.
That's right.
And do you then comprehend a period of negotiation over whether the fine is going to be paid, and if so, how? Or does he just give him? Does he just let a period of time elapse, order it executed, and then only then can he find out, can't he, whether he's going to be paid or not?
Your Honor, again, I understand your question. The original court martial convening authority has a wide latitude when to establish that fine due date.
But doesn't he lose jurisdiction once he orders the sentence executed?
Yes, Your Honor. But he doesn't.
Well, then what's he supposed to do?
Simply, Your Honor, he can simply, after the staff judge advocate has issued his recommendation, he can simply give notice to the appellant that I will be executing the sentence on day one, to use your example. If you do not pay by day one, if you claim indigency, we'll be conducting a fine enforcement hearing on day two to establish whether you are indigent or not. On day three, I will hereby order the sentence executed for contumacious conduct.
So what he's going to do is he's going to say, accused, you got to pay this fine on day one.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
Okay. If you, and I don't know whether you're going to, or I, the convening authority, don't know whether you're going to or not, but on day two, we're going to hold this hearing after I lose jurisdiction over this case. Are you saying that somehow it seeps through his approval date?
Your Honor, admittedly, he doesn't, by approving the sentence.
By ordering it executed.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
There is, like I said, a lack of regulation on the subject. However, as we see, none of the case law does allow for a substitute convening authority to then override the original court martial convening authority.
Do you think the drafters intended this result?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Which result are you talking about, Your Honor?
The result that basically no one's got the case.
No, Your Honor. I do believe, however, the drafters specifically intended that if an original court martial convening authority chooses not to hold that fine enforcement hearing, that a separate and distinct court martial convening authority doesn't have the jurisdiction to then interfere with the court.
And the basis for that conclusion is what you said earlier, that the words "the authority" are to be understood only as the original GCMCA.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Counsel, let's see if I have the sequence that you're proposing correct. court martial adjudges the sentence that includes a fine with contingent confinement attached to it. The staff judge advocate then makes a recommendation to the convening authority, and the convening authority, under your theory, then sends a notice to the accused saying, I'm going to approve this fine with contingent confinement, and that money is due on
day one.
If you don't pay, I'm going to hold a hearing on day two on indigency, and then on day three I'm going to order the sentence executed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, how does that fit into Article 57? Article 57 expressly addresses the effective date of sentences. A1 addresses forfeitures. B addresses confinement. And C says all other sentences are effective on the date ordered executed. How can a fine become due before it's ordered executed under Article 57C? That is, why wouldn't the next accused, if we followed your theory, come in here and say, Your Honors, your theory that you've put in that opinion is contrary to the express words of Article 57, which make it clear that the fine isn't due until it's ordered executed.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, what we see is the contingent confinement can't become obviously executed until a failure to pay the fine, which would have to be due.
And the fine can't be due until it's ordered executed. In other words, the accused gets this letter from the convening authority on day zero, and the accused then files a writ in our court saying, what the heck is going on here? They're trying to make me pay a fine, and they haven't ordered it executed yet.
Your Honor, admittedly, a case might arise, presumably between, as the previous example used, day two and day three, where at the last second, you know, gets a check to the federal government for the amount of money's due. However, again, we are left in a virtual black hole in the sense that there are no regulations that delineate from the president how these types of proceedings are supposed to be held.
Counsel, if you would indulge me, and let's focus in the time you have remaining, and we'll assume for purposes of that the court has never questioned the issue that you're talking about now, but rather has talked about the fact that the manual doesn't specifically delineate what we do in a case like the one we have here, where the accused is deemed not indigent.
Yes, Your Honor.
So focus on that issue.
The fact is the fact, and specifically the fact that the court, that the MCM has not delineated a procedure where under footnote 7 of Palmer that what happens when an appellant is not indigent, and yet requests contingent confinement, Your Honor?
No, focus on your argument that there was error here because he was ordered into confinement without, even though he offered to make additional payments.
Your Honor, moving on to the second granted issue and the time remaining, we see that appellant did offer to make additional payments and that those payments should have been properly considered by the convening authority.
Why?
Because appellant has made a prima facie showing of indigency. Under this court, the appellant has been confined for 5 years in a no-pay status.
But both the magistrate, the convening authority, and the lower court disagree that he made a prima facie showing that he was indigent.
Yes, Your Honor, and appellant is arguing that was error as a matter of law. As we see in Togo, the lower court and the hearing officer also found that the appellant was indigent. However, this court subsequently overruled that those two lower courts as a matter of law. Again, appellant is in a confinement status with no pay for 5 years. He has demonstrated his debts in excess of $18,000 in addition to his student loans. The federal government has failed to identify any liquid assets that appellant has.
There's $200,000 unaccounted for and substantial asset transfers to his ex-wife.
Your Honor, and those asset transfers to his ex-wife, he wishes he could get back so that he wouldn't have to be here today. However, a bank can only sell the assets that he has. The government's argument that a bank suffered a sham divorce is totally without merit. We see a bank engaged in, shall we say, extracurricular activities with other women, which came to light at appellant's court martial. There was certainly, you know, substantial grounds for a divorce. The very fact that appellant was missing $200,000 is the exact evidence that the government used, because there is no delineation of what type of procedures that were supposed to be used. The government's allegations serve as evidence. This is the only type of proceeding where the government's accusations can serve as evidence. The government fails to identify a checking account, a bank account, a transfer account, some type of wire transfer, some type of liquid assets, an account in the Cayman Islands.
Isn't it a little unusual to go through a divorce and not have a property agreement, property settlement?
I see my time's expired.
You may answer the question.
Your Honor, the record simply reflects that at the time there was no property settlement. I'm not familiar with California marital law. However, I seem to recall, just again from general knowledge, that there's a six-month waiting period, I believe, before you start dividing the assets. Again, I'm not barred in California, and I'm not familiar with California law. All I can say is the record does not reflect a property settlement at that time.
Counsel, you have an opportunity for rebuttal, and in your rebuttal, I'd hope you would address the question of whether the indigency status is properly before this court under either of the granted issues. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court, Lieutenant Craig Polson for the United States. The fine enforcement hearing in this case was properly convened, and appellant was provided with due process prior to the execution of the contingent confinement in this case. The general court martial convening authority at Camp Pendleton was the convening authority with general court martial convening authority over the appellant at the time the fine enforcement hearing was ordered, and at the time the hearing was held. The lower court specifically found that as a finding of fact. This court in United States v. Palmer recognized that RCM 1113 is a separate source of authority than Article 60 for executing the contingent confinement provision in a fine enforcement situation. As became apparent in appellant's argument, the fine is due when executed, and appellant concedes that in his brief at page 8, and this court recognized that in the United States v. Tuggle as well. To get into a catch-22 situation where the fine's due when executed, but the convening authority has no authority to then execute because his Article 60 authority has terminated, makes no sense, and there's no reason to interpret the rules for court-martial to have such an absurd result. In addition, appellant asserts that this interpretation would undermine the command prerogative of a convening authority by going against his wishes in executing the contingent confinement provision. However, the convening authority specifically approved the enforcement provision when he acted. He stated that $100,000 of the fine will be disapproved, an additional $100,000 will be suspended. However, the remainder of the sentence was approved as adjudged. That included 5 years of contingent confinement. The convening authority then attempted to execute the fine enforcement provision on April 15th, 2005, by giving the appellant notice that there would be a fine enforcement hearing. The appellant objected and said that the convening authority had no authority to convene that fine enforcement hearing. The appellant was then transferred to the Camp Pendleton Brig, and the general court martial convening authority over him at Camp Pendleton conducted the fine enforcement proceeding. Turning to the second assignment of error, there was no requirement to consider alternative punishments in a case where an appellant willfully refused to pay. If an appellant is indigent, the convening authority must determine that no other punishment is adequate. However, the reason for RCM 1113D3 was to take into account the holding of the Supreme Court in Bruton v. Georgia, which stated that an indigent may not be confined for failure to pay unless it was determined that alternative punishments were not, measures were not adequate to meet the government's interest in punishment. Nothing, the Supreme Court said, nothing precludes confinement in a case where there's a willful failure to pay. The hearing officer in this case found that the appellant was not indigent. The convening authority agreed, and so did the lower court. The hearing officer's findings are reviewed under a clearly erroneous standard according to this court's decision in the United States v. Palmer, and the appellant has the burden to prove that he made good faith efforts to pay. The appellant made no full disclosure of his assets, and he made no accounting of the gain from the sale of property that he sold on 15 June 2001 for a gain of over $130,000, and he made no accounting for any of his proceeds from the conspiracy and larceny of the government of over $400,000.
Are those issues properly, is that factual issue before this court?
Yes, Your Honor, the hearing officer made findings of fact in enclosure to his hearing officer's report, and those findings of fact are before this court.
Let me ask the question a slightly different way. Is the factual determination of the lower court and the magistrate that the accused in this case was not indigent, is that issue before this court?
Well, Your Honor, that issue is before this court if it's relevant to whether or not the convening authority considered alternative punishments. The government's position is that because the accused was not indigent, that there was no requirement to consider alternative punishments. The plain language of RCM 1113D3 states that when an accused is not, an accused has to show that he's made good faith efforts to pay, and only then do you consider alternative punishments.
Let me ask it a slightly different way. I'm not trying to trick you here.
Yes, sir.
All I'm saying is, don't we have to accept for purposes of the case here before us today that the accused, in fact, is not indigent?
Yes, sir. Unless it's clearly erroneous, if the facts in the record are, if this court concludes, like in the United States v. Tugger, this court held that the determination was clearly erroneous. However, in the United States v. Tugger, the hearing officer did find that the appellant made reasonable efforts to secure a loan, and there was some evidence that he was indigent. In this case, there is none of that.
Well, what aspect of either of the granted issues raises the question of whether that determination was clearly erroneous?
Well, you know, neither of the granted issues raise that aspect. So the government's position is that because the appellant is not indigent, there is no need to consider alternative punishments.
Now, let's take a look at the rules that we're talking about here.
Yes, sir.
Because I'm having a little trouble figuring out what the rules are. With respect to fines in RCM 1003, doesn't look like there's any limit on the fine. Is that correct? The rules don't limit the amount of the fine.
No, Your Honor, except in the convening authority's discretion to determine whether the sentence is appropriate for the offense.
Okay. And the same rule says that the total period of confinement for contingent confinement should not exceed the jurisdictional limits of court-martial. So we have here general court-martial. In this case, life imprisonment, that could be adjudged for contingent confinement?
Well, Your Honor, constitutionally, an appellant may not be confined more than the maximum sentence for the offenses for which he's been
okay. So that's a judicial rule, not a rule in the manual.
That's a constitutional requirement according to the Tate v. Short Supreme Court decision.
So in this case, what's the maximum that could have been adjudged? Not under the rule, but under the judicial interpretation of the rule.
59 and a half years.
59 and a half years.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if 59 and a half years were adjudged, would we just be in a position saying that's fine? That's within the limit. That's what the rule says. That's okay.
Well, Your Honor, that would be a legal sentence. Whether it would be an appropriate sentence is a matter that needs to be considered. When you consider the nature of the offense and the character of the accused, that's reviewed by the convening authority and also under the Article 66 review of the lower court.
Right, but unless we find there's abuse of discretion, we have no authority over that either. So our authority there would be abuse of discretion.
Yes, sir.
Then where does the manual tell us anything about who conducts these contingent confinement hearings, what triggers them, and what's the process?
The fine enforcement hearing may not be conducted until the accused is until the fine is executed. The fine is executed. The fine is not due until it's executed. Therefore, a fine enforcement hearing cannot be held until the fine is executed.
So, once it's executed, is that all the manual tells us? Do we have any idea then from the manual how this process works?
Well, Your Honor, in 1113D3, the manual states that the authority considering executing a fine enforcement provision must first give the accused notice and allow him opportunity to present evidence that he has made good faith efforts.
It doesn't tell us who that authority is, does it?
No, it does not, Your Honor. And the appellant claims that because it says the authority, it implies that it's the original general court martial convening authority. However, every time the manual specifically is designating someone to do something, it refers to a specific person. The convening authority is referred to multiple times throughout the 1100 series, specifically as the convening authority, not just as the authority. So the authority is a broader range of people and could be any number of persons. The Air Force has actually issued a regulation which states that it is the original convening authority that convened the court-martial, and that's why in United States v. Palmer, the original court-martial convening authority.
And what's the Navy's position? Make it up as you go along?
Well, Your Honor, the Navy is bound by the service court's decision in United States v. Rasko, in which that court found that the manual implies that the general court-martial convening authority with authority over the time, over the accused at the time RCM 1113 comes into play.
What role is there for this court in this process in light of the intent of Congress that there be a uniform code of military justice when we see that the president, in implementing the manual, has not set forth uniform procedures here, but has instead allowed many flowers to bloom in different approaches? Is this something that's appropriate for this court to ensure uniformity?
Well, Your Honor, there are places in the manual where the president has allowed the secretary concerned to make regulations for the process of...
I understand that, but we haven't identified anything in this fine enforcement area in which the president has specifically said, this is an area in which I, as the president, have determined that service differences are permissible, notwithstanding the general approach of uniformity. We have nothing.
Yes, Your Honor, that is true. However, the President did not limit the authority of the service to come up with their own fine enforcement hearing procedure because He specifically said the authority considering punishment. Therefore, he is allowing the services discretion as to which authority they wish that to be.
We should imply that from the absence of guidance.
From the absence of the restriction that would, if it explicitly said in the rule the convening authority, or if it explicitly said the secretary must conduct the fine enforcement hearing, then the services would all be bound to that requirement. But because the manual does not limit the service as to who conducts the fine enforcement hearing and leaves it open to whoever, whatever authority the service deems appropriate, that's who can conduct the hearing. And the Navy is bound by United States v. Vasco, and it's the general court-martial convening authority with authority over appellant at the time.
Did I understand your response to Judge Efron on the limit to contingent confinement to be subject solely to the jurisdiction of the court-martial? Did you see 59 years?
The 59 and a half years is constitutionally limited to 59 and a half years.
And there's no other limit on how much contingent confinement can be imposed?
Oh, there is. The fine must be considered to be an equivalent punishment to the adjudged fine.
Okay. I did not hear that in your response earlier, but that's your position as well.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that equivalence is based on the adjudged fine and not the fine as it remains. Palmer's footnote 6, for example, notes that, but doesn't break one way or the other.
Yes, Your
but
Honor.
Your position
the
is?
The government's position is it's the adjudged fine. And the just as constitutionally the accused cannot be subjected to more confinement than the maximum sentence for the offenses for which he was convicted, the accused also cannot be subjected to more confinement than was adjudged in the contingent confinement.
By the way, how do you figure out what's equivalent? Is there any methodology to that?
There's no mathematical equation for what an equivalent fine is, and in United States v. Palmer, the court deemed 12 months contingent confinement equivalent to the $30,000 adjudged fine, which would come up with a different mathematical equation than the equivalent fine adjudged in this case.
In your view, is equivalence a mathematical question?
No, Your Honor.
Or a philosophical question? Or is it just too vague?
It's just a rough measure of equivalency, what would be sufficient to coerce the appellant to pay the fine and would not exceed the constitutional limitations of the maximum incarceration for these sentences to which the appellant was convicted. In addition, the convening authority did consider the alternatives that were proposed by the appellant as a matter of clemency. The hearing officer determined that there were no other, although he was not required to, determine that there were no alternatives that would be sufficient. But the convening authority considered that just as a matter of clemency and determined that he did not want to adopt any of the alternatives proposed by appellant, and he chose to enforce the fine. The crux of the Supreme Court's decision in Jordan v. Georgia was good faith. The appellant's actions show none. For the foregoing reasons, this court should affirm the decision of the Court of Criminal Appeals. If there are no further questions, That concludes my final argument before this court as an active duty naval officer. With the court's permission, I'd like to say it's been an honor and a privilege to represent the United States before this honorable court.
Thank you, Lieutenant Paulson. We appreciate your service and appreciate the service of all the counsel in the appellate divisions that appear before our court.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor's departing question, obviously the issue of indigency per se is not before this court. However, it is a very significant factor in determining whether the convening authority erred when you failed to consider opponent's payment plan. So while not as the fact that he's indigent per se is debatable, it is a significant factor. The convening authority was specifically advised by a staff judge advocate that he could hold this hearing, and he failed to do so. He declined to do so. The appellant specifically requested twice to the convening authority to not hold this hearing, and the convening authority failed to act. This court should hold that such a declination of the action should constitute clemency on behalf of the convening authority, who was, again, specifically advised that he had the power to hold this hearing and decided not to do so, even though he knew, after being properly advised by a staff judge advocate, that the fine was due upon execution of his court-martial convening authority's action and order.
Are you saying that we should construe his lack of holding the hearing as clemency in remitting the rest of the fine?
No, Your Honor, not remitting. That fine will still be due payable to the United States.
Well, clemency in what sense?
In the sense that he chose not to transmute the remainder of the fine into confinement. Again, those actions were specifically requested by the appellant. As we see, appellants, although this court seems to indicate concerns about appellant's plan about how a fine enforcement hearing is to work, we see that jurisdiction is not technically lost by a convening authority when he executes the sentence. We see under the rules of RCM 1107, it does give some leeway to the convening authority to modify his action. But essentially, as this court's questions have indicated, there is simply a lack of guidance. We have no authority on what to do. We have a hearing which essentially, quite literally, the convening authority made up the rules as they went along. No justification, no authority exists for another convening authority to interfere with the original court martial convening authority's action and order. RCM 1113 does not give the government carte blanche powers to confine an appellant simply on the whims of the government. Indeed, this court in Soriano, despite the holdings in Tate and Bearden and previously at the Supreme Court's holding of indigency, still maintains to uphold RCM 1113 D3, even though quite literally it does appear to be unconstitutional when literally taken. While this issue is not before the court presently, it does highlight the fact that there is just simply a lack of regulation on the subject. An appellant merely requests that if the government is going to confine an individual, that they be forced to point to specific authority bestowed upon them by the President or Congress for them to execute such confinement.
Counsel, would you agree that if the convening authority wished to retain control over the case under RCM 1107, the convening authority would be required to not forward the case?
Yes, Your Honor.
To the Court of Criminal Appeals, putting the accused in the position of either providing himself or herself with the opportunity for a contingent confinement hearing, and thereby foregoing prompt appellate review, or seeking prompt appellate review and thereby foregoing the opportunity for a contingent confinement hearing.
Your Honor, this court in Moreno and as the post-trial cases that are currently percolating in this court has never viewed it with an iron fist, has always looked to individual explanation as to why a...
I'm not talking about the constitutional issue of timely appellate review. I'm talking about the question of whether if the individual wants timely appellate review, irrespective of whether it be a constitutional error or not or a waiver.
Yes, Your Honor.
Person said, I think my decision at the court martial was wrong. I want my case appealed. I also want the opportunity for a contingent confinement hearing down the road if I don't pay this fine within 6 months or 12 months or whatever the convening authorities want to give me. the way you proposed it, if the person wants time to pay the fine and have a contingent confinement hearing, that person must affirmatively forego timely appellate review.
Your Honor, if you view timely appellate review under the definition, yes, Your Honor, if you view upon a timely appellate review under the definition of immediately forwarding the record of trial to the Court of Criminal Appeals,
the accused says, I'm innocent. I want the CCA to reverse my case. Under your theory, he has to wait.
2 days, Your Honor. They can hold the fine, the convening authority, as previously demonstrated, we can hold the fine enforcement hearing. We can hold the fine due on day one, and then day two, we can hold the fine enforcement hearing, and day three, they can send the Florida record of trial to the Court of Criminal Appeals. Again, appellant asked for a two-stage relief. Appellant asked for an immediate order pendente lite, releasing him from confinement while this court deliberates on appellant's case. And appellant asked for the second court motion convening authority's action order to be set aside. And in light of appellant's 8-day confinement, asked for the dismissal to be set aside as well. For the aforementioned reasons, appellant prays for relief. Thank you.
Thank you. We thank both counsel, both parties, for your presentation in this case. Wish Lieutenant Paulson the best in your future pursuits, and we will stand in recess.